Singapore.
Hello, welcome to This Week in Asia.
Yeah.
We'll edit that little awkward phase out, so don't worry. This is episode 50. Obviously, we have our biggest panelists on our biggest show. I'm your host, John Lim, by the way. And, we'll just run through the introductions of a long line of people, starting with Xiu Lin from Bling Blank.
I'm not a panelist. I actually appear on the show once in a while because Bernard thought it's about time we had affirmative action on This Week in Asia.
I'm Smitty, and this is my fifth appearance, I think, on the show. Six. And we have a very long table today, so glad to be here. Thanks, everybody, for coming.
I'm Mohan, and this is my second appearance on TWIA, and I'm really excited to be part of this Kick-Ass panel.
I'm Gyan Kanai from Mozilla. This is my third appearance. I'm happy to be here.
This is Dave McClure. It's my inaugural appearance on This Week in Asia.
Thanks for coming, Dave.
Hi, I'm Serkan from TechCrunch. This should be my second time on the show.
I'm Rama. I'm from DailySocial.net, and this is my third time, and it seems getting better.
Hi, I'm Bernard. I'm one of the hosts, and also there's Cervantes, and there's producer Mike all the way at the back on the stage. Give them a round of applause, please.
How many of you here actually know what This Week in Asia, or have heard of us before?
Hey, not bad. Five people.
Brilliant. More than I expected. Well, This Week in Asia, well, we started in November last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. 8th of November 2009, that was our first episode.
Yep, and so This Week in Asia, well, we developed the show because we wanted to have a show that sort of focuses directly within the startup scene in Asia, also covering the tech news in Asia as well, because obviously, you know, there is a certain need to understand the Asian culture, you know, especially in the tech scene as well. We were happy to have so many guests on board. Some of them have been on the show before, and some of them are the first time on the show. But, you know, this show, well, to get the show going, I guess the first thing is, well, Bernard, you got a couple of announcements to make, isn't it?
Okay, before I'm going to start scooting off, I have two major announcements to make. The first announcement concerns our producer, Mike. He's going to be taking a 3-month break, and the reason is because he's expecting his fourth kid, which is a girl.
Right on, Mike.
Now, the second announcement.
By the way, he doesn't look like he's expecting, but but I'm happy for you anyway, Mike.
Yeah, he's always, you know, he's very busy all the time. I can always hear the kid sounds behind his studio. In any case, the second announcement is much more interesting. Taking a leaf from Dave's talk yesterday, startups like ours this week in Asia, we need to have distribution. And only very few people, handful of us, know our show. We want to thank a couple of people, the E27 for syndicating the show, youngupstarts.com, entrepreneurs.mind, SG Entrepreneurs. And now we are actually going to be extending the distribution as of the next episode. We have two blogs in Indonesia and China will be syndicating our show. And one of them will be dailysocial.net. And the second one, unfortunately, Gang has to take a plane back to Shanghai. It will be mobinode.com China.
Yes.
And this collaboration with Echelon 2010 have seen this month we're having 3,000 downloads a month, which is 300% growth for us this month.
Huge. Huge.
And the highest country of reach now, finally, Singapore is number 2 and number 3. The first country of the highest downloads is China.
Yes. I'm going to start practicing my Mandarin with Daniel.
We have a yep.
All right. Okay. Oh.
So you weren't listening to me at all just now. So, okay. That's great. well, just to talk about Echelon 2010 especially, you know, it's been a busy 2 days so far. And a lot of events have been going on, a lot of talks, a lot of panelists, a lot of roundtable discussions. So, you know, I just wanted to get the feedback from you guys about what stood out the most from this show especially, you know, throughout the event. Mohan, you've pulled through a lot lot of a lot of work, a lot of hours over the past few months. You know, what do you think of the event, the feedback so far of Echelon 2010? I mean, this is the first time, you know, it's evolved from the UN conferences of last year. What's the response so far? How you feel about it right now?
I'm a bit bummed that it's going to be over already. I mean, the 2 days went by really fast. So yeah, I mean, the 2 days went by really fast, and it's a bit hard to imagine that, you know, all the months of work that we did have just culminated to these 2 days. So I'm glad that it's over. I'm glad everyone had a good time. I think generally the feedback has been quite positive. People have enjoyed the sessions. I think the diversity of the audience, which is all thanks to everyone here, was the one that really stuck everyone. I mean, we had people from all over Asia, literally all over the world coming down, and the fact that Geeks on a Plane was here, they contributed in a very colourful way to the whole event.
Did you manage to attend any of the sessions? I ran into Sneha yesterday as she was running upstairs and downstairs and upstairs and downstairs, and she said it was such a pity that all these people were here and she couldn't sit down and talk to them.
So that's exactly what happened to me last year. Last year I was practically running up and down, like fixing cables and then settling internet issues. So this year I was really lucky to have a very kick-ass team in E27 and then the events company that we hired. So I actually got a chance to attend some of the sessions, quite a few actually, and it was like one of the first times that I managed to actually sit in to the conference I was organizing. So I was very lucky that way. I think the biggest bitch was, of course, the Wi-Fi. But I think that's something we'll try to fix for future events. And, you know, we always want to keep getting better. So as much as I like to hear good feedback, I would also like to hear where is it that we missed out, how is it that we can improve, everything from the content to the timing to even the food. I mean, if there's any constructive feedback that anyone can provide, we'd be more than happy to hear so we can make a better conference next year.
Right. So, Smitty, on to you. You know, Yahoo is obviously a big part of this show and also celebrating the acquisition of Corporal as well.
Yep.
So, you know, besides Corporal, what stood out for you the most during these 2 days, I guess?
I think for me, I'm just pretty overwhelmed that we get the response from the type of people coming from all over the world and realizing that something like this in Singapore is a big deal, Asia is a big deal. And, you know, I think if you tried to do this a couple of years ago, people would say, why Singapore? Why? And now it's just completely different, right? So I think for us, and from a Yahoo perspective, Mohan and I were talking about this a long time ago. It's just, you know, wanted to get behind something to support that, you know, this region's here, we're making things happen, and it's events like this that are going to make a difference, right? And I think it's great to see this coming from the private side of the house rather than the government side of the house, because I think it's being taken much more seriously this way. So for me, it looks good. I mean, I'm amazed with the numbers, there's still high turnout on the second day, and, you know, it looks like this is a huge success. So my hat's off to Mohan on that.
There's something I want to add, actually, and you know, when we first started the planning and the whole structure of the event, everyone I spoke to literally said that it could not be done, or, you know, it was too much effort, or it would cost too much money. And Yahoo was actually the first organization that took me and my team seriously and actually made a commitment to help us out to get this whole thing up and running. So a very big thank you to Yahoo for that.
And Yahoo's happy to be here, so that's the cool part. So, yeah, so it looks good. And I think, you know, I'm hoping the takeaway from this is that this puts Singapore on the map in a real fundamental way. That's, I think, the cool thing.
Mm. Well, for Gen especially, I mean, yeah, you're from Mozilla. I think Mozilla's in a very interesting times, especially in the mobile web browsing space. Right now, you know, there's an interesting shift of mentality where, you know, web content is presented within mobile applications and, you know, away from the traditional way we think of web browsing. What do you think this spells for, you know, web browsing in the future, and web browsing habits, especially on the mobile space?
That's a great question. I think it's a tough question. We will focus on the browser, and whether that's a mobile browser or a desktop or a laptop browser, I think that's, we really believe in web standards and the browser as the gateway to the web. That being said, I think there are many compelling ways to provide information in apps as well, certainly. And I don't begrudge anyone from doing that. But our focus will be the open web and web standards.
Moving on to, because we have to really speed out the things. Dave, yes. Dave was in both panels of the launch pads. You were kind of playing the Simon Cowell role. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Simon Cowell's a pussy. I put him to shame.
Yeah. But these sort of comments that you dish out, I mean, those are really typical of the sort of comments people can expect, isn't it? Wherever you deliver those sort of pitches.
Well, I mean, it's difficult to sort of be, too critical up here because I think, anybody who's getting up to pitch in front of a large audience, it's a tough job. Live demo is always difficult, especially when you're doing it over the internet. And, the whole startup experience is a roller coaster. So I hesitate to be too critical just for the sake of it's easy to be critical. But at the same time, I think that our job as reviewing startups is to be helpful first and not polite. And so trying to hold back on feedback for the entrepreneur isn't really, in their best interest in many times. I want to make sure that they can use the feedback usefully, and if I don't understand the material, I'll be cautious. But otherwise, I think it's my job to sort of give them, straight feedback and really interrupt them if I think that we're wasting time by being too silent.
You liked Found a lot, and those were one of the better pitches out there, isn't it?
It's an excellent pitch. Really did a great job.
Yeah, and what do you think of the general ideas, throughout Launchpad, and what do you think should we expect sort of trends next year or during the next event of startups?
I don't really like to predict trends. I would say that, one thing I still think some of the startups here need to work on is not getting too caught up in the technology and the solution and really focus more on solving a customer's problems. That's true as much in Silicon Valley as it is here or anywhere. I think it's easy for technologists to build solutions rather than to focus, more on how to build a, solution to a customer's problem and really emphasize that.
Dave, I got a question for you. So when do you think the Silicon Valley world, or like what you call like the VC row, is going to start focusing or maybe putting more into Asia? Like, I always see that's like, it doesn't seem to be happening yet. Do you think it's because they're not interested in it, or is it not ready yet, or when does that start to kick in the gear?
I think VC investing is generally a local sport. Really, you have to have, particularly for internet investing, let's just like focus on that for the moment. It's very language and user experience and contextually specific. So if you're investing in Asia, that really means, a couple of different things. It's not Asia. It's you're investing in Mandarin-speaking China, you're investing in Japan, you're investing in Korea, you're investing in Malay-speaking Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, so or English speakers in some of those geographies. It's not like you're investing in Asia overall.
Yep.
There's geographic reasons why you might be in a few of those different areas, but VCs are already in China.
Sure.
They're going to be in China, now, and I think that probably a lot of non-Chinese VCs have a really hard time doing that and are operating at a disadvantage. But they are trying regardless, or they're opening up local offices with, hopefully Chinese language speakers or at least Chinese familiar people. With the rest of the Asian market, I think it's on a case-by-case basis, whether there's enough, market opportunity and interest for VCs. I would say that, I'm probably interested in a lot of parts of Asia, but right now more for family reasons in Japan and potentially for market reasons in China. I would guess that probably in the next 5 years there's going to be a lot of attention to Malaysia and Indonesia. I think that's.
And when you say the market opportunity, you mean the ability to generate revenue? Meaning, like the huge populations, but the revenue's not there yet.
I mean, there's three factors in that, which is generally language, internet penetration, and average GDP, or at least average GDP spend online. So those factors and maybe some, issues around payment infrastructure that might be country-specific or currency-specific, those dictate how big those markets can be. And so a lot of the VC math there, at least for consumer internet investments, looks at how many people, how many of them online, what are the average spends, and what's the growth rate look like? And then, what's the existing incumbents that are in those markets, and can, people be competitive by jumping in there?
Yeah, so Dave, so Found was essentially one of the highlights yesterday about the pitching. So will you buy them or will you invest in them since you already invested? I'm sorry, I have to ask that question.
I'm an investor in PlanCast. That's PlanCast.
Yeah, I'm a user of PlanCast, okay? So would PlanCast ever buy, would come over here or what?
I mean, I don't know. So I think that PlanCast right now is an English-speaking service primarily. I don't know whether they need to localize to the Singaporean version of that.
I don't think so. Singaporeans speak English.
Yeah. But I mean, I think there's reasons to be optimistic that Found could do some things that maybe PlanCast isn't going to do right away. And for that reason alone, I'd probably keep my eye on it.
So the other thing, Serkan, you've been actually being the eyes of years of TechCrunch in Asia. And what do you think? What do you think? I mean, you've been to Korea for Geeks on the Plane. And what do you think about the general startup scene now?
I think that a lot of other countries are starting to eat Japan's lunch. So I think that that the web as a whole, basically, I mean, there's a power shift to Asia, especially to China, obviously. But also, I'm part of the Geeks on a Plane project, and two days ago we were in Korea, and I just saw 12 terrific startups pitching there. And I was just blown away by the quality of those people. And of those startups, so I am seeing basically a shift to China and maybe other places, just like, for example, like Indonesia and Malaysia, away from America, and I'm afraid away from Japan as well.
Okay, so just a quick one: which are the startups in Korea that we should look out for?
Well, the one that that really caught my eye is one that's called Pixelberry. It's basically an in-browser 3D game engine. It's like fantastic technology as far as I could see. But the problem was I couldn't include that particular tech startup in my article that I wrote about the Korea trip, just because it's the startup is in stealth mode. They're very secretive about their technology, so they didn't want to. They didn't want any PR.
Okay, strange. That's so weird. Yeah. So Dave, what about yourself? One pick.
I was actually interested. There were two companies that were working on interactive storytelling apps for iPad for children. That's an area that I am pretty interested in. I have a 3-year-old little girl, a 5-year-old little boy, and I really think the iPad is a pretty interesting device for education and storytelling, particularly for kids.
And you have a kid, right? 3 years old, been using an iPad and native iPhone user.
Yeah, I mean, my little girl plays with a painting app on the iPad, and it's just fascinating to watch her use that. The UI is just very natural. And, my kids have been sort of playing around on the iPhone for a little bit, but I tend to steal that away because it's mine.
Okay.
But I think, this device, I'm probably going to get one for the home for them. So I think it's a real interesting opportunity for doing language and education apps for children, probably in a broad range of ages. And I don't think we've really seen the full range of opportunity yet on that. But I think Korea, because they have, super high internet broadband, they maybe have some experience in doing that, more than the rest of the world a little bit. And so they may have an edge on doing some storytelling apps there.
So Rama, there's been a lot of focus these couple of months about Indonesia and the mobile web scene. What else can we expect to come out of Indonesia, especially with regards to its impact on what we can expect for the rest of Southeast Asia? Is there something, we should be looking out for? Is there a good reason for me to buy a smartphone now?
Well, you have all the reason to buy a smartphone, especially when you're in Indonesia. If you recognize the audience, almost all Indonesian world uses BlackBerries. So I think in the near future, more and more mobile developers will emerge. More mobile startups will start show their powers, especially in the Indonesian user, which is almost all of them are early adopters, very tech-savvy, and looking forward for more startups from Indonesia.
So, it's also a question I want to throw to Smitty as well. I mean, we can't really call it a wave, but, over the past year, you have, Octazen being acquired by Facebook and recently Corporal by Yahoo.
Friendster being bought by MOL.
Yeah, it's not a wave, but, you can tell that there's a certain Trend, yeah. You can the big U.S. companies or big web companies in the U.S. are looking towards the Asian region for interesting ideas. But you know, what do you think this will impact the startup scene in Asia? I mean, will startups sort of be created with an exit strategy to be acquired by these companies as its ultimate goal, do you think? You know, we'll build this to sell to Google, we'll build this to sell to Yahoo, you know.
So I think, I don't, you know, if this is a trend or not, I think, you know, aren't startups always looking to have an exit? I mean, whether it's getting acquired, going public, or making money, that's the goal, right? So I think in these kind of times, it's probably easier to get acquired than go public or maybe even try to find a revenue model, right? So I think for us, you know, we'll see. This is largely, you know, the beginning of kind of the emerging markets work we've been doing. Indonesia is one of those countries. It's not the only one. But I think, you know, it's from my perspective, you know, some amount of innovation and audience, you know, mind share is going to come out of these countries. So this is one way to do that, right? It'll be interesting to see. Does this change the effect? I know from being in Indonesia last week when we closed things and started kind of talking about the next steps, you know, it was encouraging to hear other Indonesians say that, you know, this is a huge sign that there's a possibility, right, rather than just only having the Indonesian market. So we'll see what happens. I think it's some of the other countries are much tougher to do this in, so we'll see if this is a trend or not. But I think if you just look at the audience capability of Indonesia, you would have to say that if you're one of the big companies, you can't ignore Indonesia, right? I mean, it's just too big to ignore. So we'll see. Whether that means things will get happening in Vietnam or things will start to happen in other countries, I'm not really sure that's the case. But I think from Indonesia's perspective, it's definitely on the map.
If I can may add a little bit, almost all startups in Indonesia are bootstrapped. So when Yahoo acquired Kopro, a lot of them see this as, I have the same chance of building a startup and getting acquired by a big Silicon Valley company. So it kind of opens their eyes, but there are also some false perception that getting acquired is the only exit strategy from them. So in Indonesia, we don't have any internet company going IPO. So I think a part of E27 and other blogs is to educate Indonesian startups about the possible exit strategy, not just to get getting acquired.
I want to sort of take on from Indonesia going back to Japan, and I want to talk to Sakan on this. So I see that a lot of Japanese companies have actually went IPO. For example, Mixi, Gree. These are the two major examples. Is IPO a more common form of sort of exit strategy in Japan? I mean, even China as well, right? Yeah. Or even Gen can answer that too, since they are both very knowledgeable about the Japan market.
Well, I mean, I would say that for startups in Japan in particular, IPO is more of an option than for those startups, for example, in Korea or Indonesia, for example. But just in the recent two or three years, the IPO market in Japan has cooled down quite a bit. So last year, I think we had about 19 exits via IPO, but the number was like much higher just a couple of years ago. But still, I mean, you have the occasional multi-billion-dollar IPO. Just for example, for Gree, the mobile gaming company that you mentioned, it's now listed for $2.7 billion at the Tokyo Stock Exchange. There's a couple of others. So there's also DNA, which has a market cap of $4 billion, and an e-commerce platform called Rakuten, which even has a market cap of $10 billion, which was Facebook's last valuation. Yeah, so the IPO market in Japan is pretty impressive.
Just that Japan has three markets. There's Mothers, there's JASDAQ, and then there's the Nikkei. So if you're a small company, you'll list first on Mothers, and as you get bigger, you'll move up to the JASDAQ, and then if you become a big company like a Toyota or a Sony, you'll get up to the Nikkei. So that allows small companies to go public at a smaller. It allows companies to go public more easily.
Do you guys know what were the companies that went public in the last year on Mothers? I guess is the smallest of those three. I mean, Cookpad, I know.
Yeah, yes, I mean one recent example is Cookpad. which is a recipe site, which is basically in Japanese only, and they now have a market cap of $300 million. But that was a couple of months ago. But we're still waiting for the next cookpad, actually. So I can't remember. I don't know again about you, but I can't remember any spectacular IPO on the last.
We'd have to look that up. But.
Yeah. So that was last year sometime.
Well, and also going back to, I think, one of the afternoon talks given by Smitty, you talked about starting local and going global, but within Asia, especially within China, you have this sort of rebuild to serve our own markets sort of thing. Do you think that's a sustainable model, I think, going forward, rather than what you said just now?
I think it really depends how you look at it. Like, for... You know, as they just said themselves, like, Japan's kind of its own market, right? And in theory, so is China, right? And so you have people that focus just on that. I think in the other regions, most of the countries aren't big enough themselves to where you're going to get big if you only focus on your country. So if you just focus on China, you could do that, right? And it would be huge. Or you just focus on Japan. But I think, if you're in Malaysia and you just said, I'm just going to focus on Malaysia, how big could you eventually be, right? So I think we'll see what happens. I think a lot of what we talked about in the afternoons was kind of a working hypothesis. Is it going to change, right? And, you don't see many of the Chinese sites doing stuff outside of China, but you see the capital flowing out or licensing things to people outside of China. But so we'll see if that changes. I mean, I notice now with Tencent, kind of what they're doing is taking pieces of regional players. You have one of the big South African companies that takes pieces of all the regional players. They own somebody in the Philippines. They own somebody in Thailand. They just bought into somebody in Indonesia. And then you have like Rattakun or Yatakan. They're actually doing these e-commerce sites across borders. So it's starting to happen, but it's some in non-traditional ways, right? But I think that trend is definitely going to keep accelerating.
Yeah. And just as a quick side note, maybe, I mean, if you look at China, there are now 10 online gaming companies from China listed at the NASDAQ, and they have a combined market cap of like $50 billion, right? So if your country's stock market is underdeveloped or if it's just not there, there are still possibilities to go IPO, right? And there are many more Chinese tech companies listed in America.
Well, social gaming, especially in Asia, I think that's a big topic of discussion over the past year and also on this conference itself. Bernard, just want to get your talk about, you want to get your thoughts about it. I mean, social gaming, we see like a gold rush towards it right now. You know, how many 100 MMORPGs being developed in China? Do we think, are we seeing like a bubble of sorts?
I don't know whether I probably think that I'm not the best person to comment on this, but what I think I'm observing is that there's a lot more social game. The two groups, there's the MMORPG groups, they're still doing effectively very well, but you only have about 3 to 4 players. And then there is the social games, which is a mad gold rush. Any new games that comes up from maybe China, Japan, or Korea, maybe the next thing you know, Zynga is going to clone it and do a Zynga double, and then, by the way, you'll see the Zynga version of it. I think the important part of it, probably whether it's going to be a bubble, is whether it actually has actual revenue streams. I think predominantly Asian social games have a very good monetization model. Just look at QQ, for example. The basic ARPU per user is $2.77, as compared to Facebook per user is only $1.18, based on the last year's figures. So if you think about it, the social games here actually extract a lot more from the revenues from the user more as compared to doing advertising as such. So it may be a bubble, may not be a bubble, but I'm going to leave that to someone else to make comments on that.
Anyone want to comment on that social gaming?
I actually want to move the discussion a little bit more, because I know the geeks on the plane didn't just go to Japan and Korea. They also went to China. I think they spoke in Chennai City recently, right? Yeah, so I sort of want to get a sense of what do you think of the Chinese market? Because they are like a giant metronome, or some people call the Great Firewall of China, basically. Yeah, what's your sense of that market?
I think there's like amazing opportunities in China. I'm not sure that they're for anyone other than the Chinese. So that's kind of an interesting question. There's huge potential. There's an amazing amount of entrepreneurship that's happening in Shanghai and Beijing, and actually even other locations. There's a lot of companies outside China that have development shops in those geographies and others in China. You know, but I think in general, when you're looking at least at consumer internet investment, your math is based on sort of this, you know, overall framework of, you know, language, population, GDP, internet percentage online. China's, you know, a very large country. India is also. So there's a lot of potential in those markets to do things. In India, at least, it's an English language that's familiar to many other people. But I think unless people are willing to make the investment in Mandarin, it's tougher for non-Chinese to kind of go into to China. That said, there seem to be a lot of people doing it. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, since we're doing a live show and we've got an audience, let's take a couple of questions. Bernard's going to rove around with a mic. If you kind of just raise your hand and wave wildly at him, he will come to you.
So usually we're a bit more kind of lively and crazy, but we have a lot of people, and it's hard to do that the way we normally do that. Usually there's a lot more banter, and that's the fun part, but we have too big a crew. But I think, you know, we definitely want to talk about Echelon, why we got the guys. And I think for you people, you know, for me, the thing I'm excited about with Echelon is these kind of guys coming to Singapore and being here. And I think what's fun is being able to talk to them. So I think we should move the discussion back out to you guys and give you people a chance to talk to these guys who are not here very often. I think that would be more exciting. So any questions out there, don't be shy, and we'll try to... Yeah, and please tell us who you are and maybe even what company you're associated with and where you're from so we get a sense of the audience.
Okay, my name is Tudor from Grok Media. There's one big subject that was buzzing around, but I didn't hear much about it on Echelon, Web TV. What do you guys think about that?
What's Web DB or Web TV? TV, as in, I mean, what's happening with it, or?
I mean, Google made the large public announcement at their I.O. conference, and there are some pretty big rumors that Apple is planning something at the developer conference.
Yeah.
How do you guys see that going?
I think it's probably not germane to Echelon because it's not really happening yet. But I can tell you that Yahoo's actually been working with some of the local guys on what's getting built into the TVs and stuff like that. And I noticed, I think people aren't sure how to digest all this stuff yet. Like, you know, I have an Apple TV that I just hacked and put Boxy on it because it was a lot easier than what Apple was giving me. But, you know, It's interesting. I don't think it's mass media yet, right? So depending, and I don't think developers see a path to making money or doing anything with it. So I don't know why anybody cares yet. But I think from a consumer standpoint, it's definitely going to get big. My take on this is Apple's going to have to make some big moves and do something aggressive because they've largely blown it with the Apple TV, and everybody keeps waiting for them to build some sort of like a media center. And it's stupid to me that they haven't. I mean, you know, and a lot of people are using their iPads as like remote controls to their machines, but there's not enough on them yet. So something's definitely going to happen in that regard. And I think, you know, Apple's definitely got the content to move through there, but it largely remains to be seen how they're going to do it. But I think it's because they're too busy fulfilling all the iPad orders that they haven't had time to think about it. But we'll see.
Mohan.
Something I want to add. I think Web TV is one thing, but the other big thing that we were supposed to talk about at Echelon that we didn't really talk about was social TV. So there's actually a local company working with quite a large, another large company. They haven't finished the deal yet, so I can't talk in detail. That's actually bringing, you know, the whole social world to the TV platform. I mean, imagine watching the World Cup and then having all your friends watching the same channel and being able to comment, you know, share stuff, even buy virtual goods and share it with your friends. So I think the whole convergence of web and TV looks very promising. I haven't seen any implementation yet that has entirely done it. I mean, let's be honest, the last thing you would want to do sometimes while you're watching a TV program is to be injected by, you know, what your friends are saying, you know. So I think...
Oh, come on. No, that's exactly what you want to be doing. If you're not sitting in front of the TV, you know, chatting with your friends, you know, you'd want to be doing it on a device, possibly on multiple devices. You know, there's a company called Mezo that was recently funded that basically allows you to do check-ins around social media experiences, particularly TV. I think Hot Potato is another company that's doing that stuff. Whether or not they can make any money at it is unclear, but there's certainly a lot of people starting to experiment with, you know, fan sites and fan-affiliated sites around television experiences or, you know, broadcast internet experiences. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm probably less familiar with this than, like, a younger demographic, but I got to think that people are SMSing and, like, doing a bunch of different, like, social media device experiences with handhelds, you know, while they're watching TV.
So this company is actually going to make a lot of money on it just based on this one deal. And it's slated to come out sometime around September.
Yeah, but they have to invest a lot also because one of the biggest boundaries is most of the countries, especially in Asia, haven't really got the infrastructure for that, especially in emerging markets like Indonesia or Thailand or Vietnam. They don't have the bandwidth and stuff like that.
You don't think there's SMS opportunities just around that stuff?
Sorry?
You don't think there's just SMS opportunities around that stuff? I mean,
I see a future in mobile TV, but...
Sure, but I'm just saying, you know, why wait, right? There's SMS opportunities around existing experiences.
Basically, you're right. I mean, you already do it on SMS. There are those things that run at the site when they go, but yeah. Moving on to the next question.
Hi, my name is Yusuf. I'm from Outblaze in Hong Kong. When you think of Singapore and IT, basically one name comes to mind, Creative, Sim Wong Hoo. So a question, you know, is where is the next creative going to come in Singapore? I was expecting to see some JoJo's, you know, being shown around here, you know, the ex-Crunchpad, unless Serkan might have asked for a gag order on them, you know. But I didn't see them. So, you know, I'm looking for the next Sim Wong Hoo. Is that an eternal quest?
Only Singaporean here is actually Mohan and Chulin, right?
Well, yeah. The Juju only started shipping in Singapore
I'm
yesterday.
I'm a token Singaporean. Come on.
Yeah, quasi-Singaporean doesn't count. Yeah, I mean, can I just go there? I'll take this one. So I don't think you should actually just look at the hardware. There's not really something that is just hot or not, and don't aim to be the next creative or so on. There's so much opportunity on the web itself without actually building hardware. And hardware is not cheap to build. You have to build the hardware, the R&D, the distribution. Distribution doesn't come easy. You don't want to take that route. Unless you have a lot of money, don't take that route.
As one of the Singaporeans who is now working, I probably would just say that we fought Apple twice on Creative and Juju. They failed. Maybe we'd be third time lucky. But we have another guy here who wants to ask a question.
Thank you, Bernard. My name is King Yu from Social Walk. We're from Malaysia. Actually, Bernard, I also want you to answer the question. It's on the topic of acquisitions. Yahoo acquired Corporate. It's an international acquisition. Do you think that kind of trend will continue in Asia? And very specifically, is there a way for us as startups, is there a proper way or strategy to approach someone who you want to acquire you?
Get lots of customers who pay you money.
And make it so painful for the big company to come in such that they have to acquire you. That's my second. That's my answer as well. Anyone else?
You know, I don't mean to be too flip there, but I just, you know, acquisition is usually something that happens from a buyer perspective, not necessarily from a seller perspective. You can obviously work with people to increase potential interest, but, you know, your best bet in selling a company is just to continue to execute on, you know, your company strategy, which usually means getting users or getting money or both.
Hi, my name is Guy Shen, from Startup Lobang Club. It's a social price comparison site in Singapore. Just wanted to get your opinion on startups, internet startups specifically outside of the US. So we've seen what's happened in Europe and also in China, sort of the two big major markets outside of the US, that a lot of their startup activities, I would say, are sort of like US copycat or clone, that have been actually quite successful in terms of either getting acquired, you know, IPOing, or eventually even exceeding what their clones were in the States from, say, QQ, which copied ICQ. I'm saying, is this an actual good strategy, talking locally, in terms of from Singapore and to a great extent Southeast Asia, in terms of should the ecosystem be actually having a lot more clones at this stage in our ecosystem?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I mean, the strategy mean just copy something and then hope you get bought because it's a good copy, or what?
I mean, if you look at Europe, like, I mean, from the Samway brothers starting with copying eBay, I mean, to all the acquisitions that happened and what they're funding now, and in China, I mean, you look at all the large companies. I mean, you look at Tencent with QQ, which copied ICQ in the early 2000s, and now they're kind of exceeding and become the largest company. I mean, I'm talking about that ecosystem.
I mean, it's definitely happening, and like you see some of this in Vietnam. Actually, that's the playbook for a lot of Vietnam stuff. There's a Twitter copy, there's a Facebook copy, there's a Messenger copy. And, you know, it may be a strategy for myself running around the region looking for things. I completely ignore it because that's, to me, not innovation. And it's probably not a strategy for creativity either. But I guess for some people it works. And in these marketplaces where you can largely exist with pseudo-government protection and blocking the foreigners through unconventional methods. You see this in China. You see this in Vietnam. You can probably get away with it, but I don't think it's an interesting long-term model myself.
Why do you say that, though? I mean, don't you? I mean, particularly, I would think from a large company in Yahoo's position that would be acquiring, that would be a great way for you to sort of de-risk, you know, major ways to acquire new economic activity and customer base. You know, on a country-by-country, language-specific basis, you should be able to identify where people are sort of seeing successful, you know, e-commerce or advertising or behavior patterns with other people, de-risking the initial model and then just using the language customization to kind of, like, develop that market.
And I
agree with you. It's not very innovative, but from a purely economic activity, it's probably quite pragmatic.
It takes special skills, though, to not just copy. I mean, you have to customize.
Sure, but, I mean, the local market should have the advantage in those, so yeah, it should be a strategy that, like, benefits.
Indonesia have lots and lots of Facebook copy, Twitter copy, Flickr, everything. We copy everything, but...
Yeah, and particularly in the U.S. market, we're clueless about international. Yeah, we don't know the first thing about internationalization in most cases.
And it works. Like you see in Vietnam, this works, right? But it also works because there's a little gentle push by the government to support the local player.
Why are you looking at me when you talk about that?
I'm not looking. I'm looking down the table. It's like you see. It's like if you've been to Vietnam and like sometimes Facebook works, sometimes it doesn't. That's not an accident, right? It's not like some of your packets got lost along the way. It's particular providers are being told to block it. So,
exactly,
so
yeah.
Then what happens is the guy who's building the local site, you'll find, never gets blocked and is largely encouraged to copy some of the features that are in Facebook, and it's becoming a marketplace. And yeah, it's definitely happening, and I think it's a trend if you can get away with it and the country you're in supports it. Where if you look this vis-a-vis Indonesia, the things aren't blocked, I don't think that strategy is going to work because the guy can get to Facebook all day long and he's going to keep using it. You know, the guy in Vietnam is only using the other site because he got tired of being blocked now and then, right? So I don't think it's a great strategy, but it definitely happens. But in the largely democratized markets where you have freedom, say like in Indonesia, you're going to have to come up with something more creative than copying something that isn't getting blocked.
But,
right?
But I don't think that the most significant advantage for these companies is government protectionism. The most significant advantage is language and cultural familiarity and the fact that English market sort of initial innovators are just clueless about other languages. I mean, Facebook and Google are probably pretty dominant in internationalization strategies, but they're far the exception, not the rule. The Samware Brothers are an excellent example of just like ripping it in Germany on multiple models. Like they've done Zappos, they've done eBay, they've done Groupon, probably two different versions of it. You know, they've done a Facebook knockoff. You know, specifically in that market, I think you'd say that they've done an incredibly successful job, and I don't think you'd suggest that the German market is all that protectionist.
I think this is a sign that we need to do a show specifically devoted to this issue. I think we have time for one more question from the floor, Bernard.
Hi, I'm Arvind. I'm founder of bubbleideas.com. The question that I have is, from investments point of view, I can categorize startups into two verticals. The ones which look at Asia or the subsets of Asia like India or Singapore or Thailand. And there are certain startups which look at the world straight away. Okay, just like Twitter started off California and they spread across the world. The product was directed at everybody. In California, the California investors, they happen to sponsor a lot of innovative technology and stuff, but the VCs outside of California actually start asking question, why would this be successful from Asia? Why not from California? So do you see that kind of change coming out to the rest of the world? Because internet's supposed to bring equilibrium. So how long would it take?
Do you guys get the question?
So I think just to paraphrase, the question is basically currently all the startups coming from California, they can spread across the world very easily, like Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare. But there seems to be no cases that's going backwards. So what type of things, characteristics a startup must have so that they can do this, reverse the equilibrium of the trend of internet startups only coming from US and instead from Asia?
You don't need that to go to the U.S.
Yeah, I think, our whole presentation today was about this, right? And it remains to be seen. I think what's interesting is the plumbing's been laid for people to take advantage of the guys that went global so that you can build something, right? So if you look at Twitter and you look at Facebook, it's created global plumbing now that who cares where it comes from, it's there. But you can be the guy, you know, in Malaysia and you're using this plumbing to go global, right? That was very expensive. expensive before, right? If you thought about data centers and where you're doing, largely that's the playing field's leveled, right? I think it's a cultural thing that's probably still a struggle, and the fact that sometimes people view the information as largely so U.S.-led that they don't understand that there's something like a MiG-33 taking over the world that I think they say produces more transactional traffic than Twitter does, you know, on a daily basis in like India, and no one even knows about it. So, but it could be that MiG-33 doesn't care because they're not going to make their money in America anyway, right? So I think it depends where you're going to try to make your money and what you're going to do. But yeah, I think there's a playing field for disruption now. The question is someone going to do it? Is someone going to take advantage? I haven't seen it yet, but I'm optimistic that it's going to happen.
You know, I think that the high-level observation is that it's much easier to internationalize hardware products and non-web products because they're not as language and culturally, contextually different, right? When you start to get to the web, then you're talking specifically about language, semantic specifics that are probably not even just, you know, based on language, but based on very specific local geography sometimes. It's harder for everyone to go into another language and win. It's probably easier for people who are non-English speakers to go into English-speaking countries and win just because English is a world language and so many people speak English. But still, it's often the case that a lot of people go into the English language market and their page grammar is just slightly off. And they don't know that, right? And they'll think it's close, but it's not quite there. And for people who are, you know, more native language, English language speakers, at least in the U.S., U.K., like, it matters a lot if you have punctuation correct or, you know, context or idiosyncratic, you know, sort of statements. And something that someone else would not be able to detect as slightly off immediately as a giveaway that it's not a native U.S. speaker, and therefore immediate reduction in trust, which is incredibly, you know, important for e-commerce sites at the very least, certainly for financial services. That just has a dramatic impact. But I think it's even worse the case in the reverse.
Thank you. I think it's a good sign that the conversation's flowing, but unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up. So if I may just have one closing comment from each of you about your hopes for Echelon 2011. Let's start from Rama and have
Mohan have the last word. How will we call Echelon? Are you going to change the name again, Mohan?
Yes, maybe he has a big announcement for us later, we'll see.
True, don't change the name next year, but Echelon 2010 is a perfect moment for Indonesian startups because we've got so many attention for the past 2 weeks, acquisitions and funding from foreign companies. So I would like to thank Mohan for the awesome event. Thanks for inviting us. Especially for our Indonesian startups, good pleasure.
Yeah, apart from the usual things, of course, also from me, the only thing I can say now is we need something like this in Japan as fast as possible.
I think we should have more parties and Wi-Fi events. I was incredibly impressed with Singaporean food and hope to make that a repeat.
So will we see a gig in a plane in Southeast Asia?
We should talk about that.
Let's work on it.
I think there's definitely a possibility.
Okay.
I'll throw the party, David.
We may be doing more parties than talks and panels.
Yeah, we can always get Sakan down here again. Yeah.
I would also like to thank Mohan and the whole E27 organization for this amazing event. My hopes for 2011 is just, I think, bigger and better. And more excitement, more...
Oh, shit, 2011, David.
The pressure is popping up.
Actually, very honestly, the entire effort was really a global effort. You know, we'd be nowhere without the sponsors, the speakers, all our media partners, you know, even Geeks on the Plane, every... So it was entirely the ecosystem that fueled and made this event happen. It's not really just E27 and my team and all. So, I mean, the big appreciation and applause should go to the entire ecosystem, everything from our sponsors, speakers, partners, and media partners. So they're the ones that really deserve it, and they're the ones that made this happen.
Yeah, I just want to thank Mohan, too, and we appreciate you allowing Yahoo to have such a big part of this, which is awesome. My hope for 2011 is that the Singaporean government wakes up and realizes that this is the center of innovation and funding, not the way they're currently doing it, and hopefully that they can kind of get behind this in a much bigger way.
Well, my final hope for 2011, it's what, episode 100 of This Week in Asia? Do you think we can do it?
No, knowing Bernard, you'll go probably 200 or something.
More than double.
Come on.
All right, and with that, we'll wrap up the show. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, you can follow us on at This Week in Asia on Twitter and www.thisweekinasia.net. Thank you very much.
See
you soon. Bye.
Bye.